CG rates to date.
Thank you. I hope you can hear me. First of all, thank you for having me this year in Potsdam. My name is Saber Katelari. I'm a core developer at IDCS.com. And today I'll be showing you how you can build your own in-MLCR server using CG rates. Firstly, something about our company. It's located in Bavaria, Germany, with back offices in Romania and Albania. We have over 17 years of experience in architecturing server-side solutions in voice over IP environments. We have platform implementations covering both wholesale and retail businesses categories. And by now, we responsibly understand real-time processing and constraints and serious live system outages. Something about CG rates. It's a real-time enterprise billing suite, more like a framework since it can do many things. It's pluggable into any existing infrastructure. It's non-intrusive into existing setups. So it means it does not force you to make decisions. It's all dependent on your system admin if you want to take into consideration what CG rates gives you, or if you just want to ignore it. We are an open source software since born in 2010. First sources published in 2012. Full sources are available in GitHub, 100% in Go. We always mention Go because when CG rates first started, Go was also in its first weekly releases. And this means that we were one of the first implementers of Go. And it also means that everyone that we also kind of paved the way for other people coming after us. We have no add-ons in private repositories, and we take into consideration community contributions also. About Engine is performance-oriented. It has this built-in advanced caching system with transactional, list record used, and time TTL expiring records. It's asynchronous, processing with microthreads. If you know about Go, you probably know more about this. Also including API load balancer. We have three branches, V0.10, Master, and 1.0. V0.10 is our most conservative branch. Master is where we have our most recent developments. And also 1.0, we call it like the pinnacle that CG rates can do, but it's still in early developments. We have a test-driven development environment with over 10,000 tests as part of our testing suite. Here we can mention unit tests, integration tests, and also call tests for switches. It has a built-in modular architecture, which is cloud-ready, has microservices with a rich set of RPC APIs, because everything in CG rates is API-related. And it's easy to enhance by rewriting specific components. So, for example, if you want to rewrite the engine in some other code, you can pretty easily do so. Some features for about CG rates. You can do online, offline charging system. You can have multi-tenancy from day one. This is more for white labeling platforms. You can have multiple databases supported. We have multiple databases supported. To mention some, MySQL, Microsoft SQL, SQLite, Mongo, Redis, Postgres, and also our internal database, which is compatible with everything we do. This is also a pretty challenging job to do for a relatively small team that we are. You can have real-time configuration reloads, so you can reload your configurations without having to shut down the engine and open it again. You can have rating engine with derived charging and A number rating. You can have account balances management with bundles and Dyna prepaid. With Dyna prepaid, you can create accounts on the fly and have it give some restricted permissions or limited permissions to your system. You can have sessions or event charging with balance reservation and refunds. This is prepaid logic. Stair-shaken authentication, which is more for North America. CDR logging with support for interim records and rating queues. This is when you have your CG rates sitting in a black box and have it communicate with your switch. and have your CDRs rated in a matter of milliseconds without using any databases from CGI's side. You can have a high number of interfaces for event readers and exporters, to mention some AMQP, SQS, SQL, CSVs, XMLs, and a couple more. You can have fraud detection with automatic mitigation, LCR with quality-based bundles, quality-based stats and bundles, call statistics with pattern monitoring, so you can find your ASR and your ACD live from your CGRs. And also in combination with your proxy, you can find your average call cost and your total call cost. You can have dynamic pricing imports with templates. This is since all suppliers have their different formats, and CGRs is compatible with most of them. You can use it with diameter, with radius, if you need some authentication, Wi-Fi authorization, with DNS if you need in MLCR routing, which is also the topic for today. And you can also have a basic SIP server where it can do redirecting with your CGRs. You can have it redirect traffic from your switch to your CGRs with some routing and IP addresses. Else we have resource allocation and controller. This is some virtual channeling for your customers. You can have your API server with GOB, JSON, HTTP JSON support, built-in high availability with dynamic partitioning support, API capturing analysis service. This is something like an internal grant grab for CGRs. Clustering through remote replication for internal cache and database. Data versioning with automatic migration. This is when you need to move between releases in the same branch. You can do so with data migration. You can have, and we also do agile, we also are agile in developing new features. So if you have some feature or some idea that you want to bring us, you are more than welcome to do so. This is an internal schema or diagram that we have for CGRs. It basically shows how CGRs has its components and interfaces and how they communicate with each other. On your left side, you can see all our interfaces. You might notice that we don't have OpenSIPS over there because OpenSIPS has its own native module, which is faster and better than anything we can do since it's native to OpenSIPS. And if we take one example, for example, DNS agent, which is on your left, you can see that it communicates with sessions, which is our main subsystem, and through there it can communicate with every component or all components at all or one component. It's all dependent on what you want to do with CGRs. For some use cases, again, online, offline charging, you can have a highly configurable rating bundle with voice, data, SMS, MMS, monetary, or anything else. In 1.0, you can really charge anything else. You can have their concurrent sessions with concurrent sessions handling and also a centralized CDR server. And this altogether is what others call online-offline charging system. Another use case which you can do is a dynamic routing system, where you can use the dedicated subsystem for various routing strategies. There we can mention load balancing. The difference in our load balancer is that we cannot use real setups, but only real calls, since we get that information out of CDRs. Also, you can have LRN support via attributes, bundle support with bundle support routing systems, quality-based stats monitoring with thresholds, and also load balancer, which I mentioned. Now to get to the Enum LCR server that the topic is for. Firstly, we need to know about DNS. Probably most of you know, but DNS is something like an internet address book, where you query for something and you get information back specific to that, what you question for. Depending on your answer, the answer is categorized in some record types. There's a couple, but we only work with these three, A-type, SRV type, and NPDR type records. we work only with this because that's what most people need, and nobody has really asked for anything more than this. To shortly describe them, A-type records convert domain addresses into IPv4 addresses, SRV records for network servicing. There you can find priority, weight, port, targets from your SIP addresses. And most importantly, in NEPTR records, which convert enum addresses, enums into SIP addresses. But what is enum? Enum is basically a standard to translate telephone numbers into URIs. Here's an example how we can do that. Firstly, you need an E164 number. You can find, you can convert your number into an E164 number by firstly removing any zero, any leading zero before it, and also adding your country code after it, and with a plus at the end. And then to convert this enum164 number into an EN number, you have to remove the leading plus, reverse all the digits, add a dot between each digit, and then add a suffix. This suffix, the one you have in this example, is from RFC standards, but in CGRHs, we don't really care what you put in your suffix. In my example, even I even replaced this ARPA later with the account string that I will use. For DNS agent, I also mentioned earlier, it's an interface. It's like a middleware where you can where your DNS client communicates with DNS agent and then sends that information, that request, to the DNS server, and then from there, maybe you can see from the schema. From there, you can go into sessions and any component. It can take any component and then give that information back to the DNS client. In terms of capability, you can have as many listeners as you want. Also to mention, in DNS agent, we also implemented our DNS server and DNS service and listeners. And for listeners, you can have as many listeners as you want. And they can all be opened at the same time. You can have UDP, TCP, and TLS protocols. And this means it is highly configurable and concurrent. Again, for query types, we support A, SRV, and NEPTR. For configuration, this is in your configuration files. You need to open a new field, name it DNS agent. Also, this is JSON. Everything is JSON in configuration. So name a new field DNS agent, enable it. By enabling it, you allow it to receive and to send API calls. Then you name listeners, where again you can see that it's a list, so you can have as many listeners as you want. You name your address by giving it an IP and a port. In my case, I use an empty IP, since if it's empty by default, in CGRHs we put what's in default, and in this case in default is just localhost. And for port, I put 2053. If left empty, again, this will be filled by the default, which is 53. Next, for that address, I need to attach it a network. On this case, I use the UDP protocol. And again, if left empty, again, it would be an UDP by default. After that, I want to also be open to TCP listeners. That's why I create the same address, but this time I change the protocol. This doesn't mean that either one or the other will work. It means that both of them will work at the same time. There's something messed up over there. They should be on the same line. For the last one, the address for TLS, since I cannot have TLS and TCP on the same address, I can put it in a different port for this example. And after we finish with the listeners, you go to connect your DNS agent with sessions, and you do that by using session cons. You can have either localhost, internal, or some configurable other connection, which is done by you. I use, in this case, localhost, since I want to track the network, the packets going through sessions and DNS agent. You can switch it with internal if you want to have a faster connection, or if you do not need this this debugging, this packet tracing. Next, on that same DNS agent field, you put request processors. To shortly explain, request processors do the logic of what's going to happen after a query is done to your server. In this case, you can have many request processors. In this case, I'm only showing one. And this is what happens with it. First, we define an ID for it, which has to be different from other request processes. It doesn't matter what you put inside, it just has to be different. So in this case, I'm describing what I do in this process, which is NAPTR least cost route. After that, you define filters. Because I want to find the least, I want to find the least cost route to find a SIP address for my query. I first need to be sure that the query type is an NAPTR and that the leading country code starts with 32. This is just an example. You can have any filter that you want. The first filter asks the query type from the request if it's a full NAPTR string. And if that's true, it goes to the second filter, which finds if there's a prefix starting in that query name that starts with 32. And before it does that, it converts that in number into E164. And that's done with filters. If those are true, it goes to the next one, which are the flags. In my case, I want to create an event each time this query is being made. So I put their meta event, which calls an API for sessions process event each time this query is true. And I also put rails authorize because I want to get the max usage when the query is done. And I also put routes because I want to do least cost routing with it. Next, I put a log there because I want to get some logs out of CGH when this query is done. So I want to get the request and the reply from CGH. And after that, I put request fields. The request fields are what you want to populate when this query is being done. In this case, I want to populate account, destination, setup time, type of record, and usage. I want to populate this because I want to put them in my event later, and the event needs to use them. How I populate them? I populate account with the query name by stripping away the first E164 and what's before it. So it leaves me behind with only the 1001 account, which I will show later. This way I populate account with 1001. In destination, I put the query name fully converted into E164. In setup time, I put now for the current time of the query, type of record voice, and usage of 1 minute. For the reply fields, I want to put what I want to reply to the DNS with. So I want to reply with order of 100, preference 10, flags U, and service E2U plus SIP. And the most important part, the regular expression, which I find through route parameters. I didn't show here, but I created a routing profile before, and I put there two informations in two routes, and that information are the SIP addresses, which are different. One of them is of highly cost, and the other one is lesser cost. And since I have that meta routes flag over there, those routes will be sorted using least cost. And since I have a reply, I want to find that reply, the routing parameters for that first index of the route. And the first index is always, depending on the sorting route, in my case is least cost, the first index is going to be the least cost route. And under the reply, you can see CGREP, it's the reply. I find in the structure routing profile, I go to run ID meta row. Meta is, in this case, asterisk of iteration 0 of that ID. I go to routes of iteration 0 again, and then I find the value of routing parameters, which is the SIP address that it finds. And then I populate it to that regular expression. After that, I just also put the replacement dot at the end. For the client, I'm using dig. In this case, I'm querying localhost on port 2053. The type of record is NEPTR. And you can see the enumber that I put there. You can see the 1001 account at the end. For the reply, I captured this using ngrep. You can see the API that gets called, sessions process event. In the flags, they are the exact same that I put in my request processes. The tenant gets automatically taken by default configs, which is cjs.org. The ID is some random number. Time is the current time of the query. And in the event, you can see they are exactly what I asked for in my request processes again, if you can see. And that's just the request. For the reply side, I can see the reply from that API, where I find the max usage of 60 seconds. If you remember, I put 1 minute of the request. You can see that it's also 60 billion nanoseconds. It suggests also works in nanoseconds. Also, I have the reply on the routes profile side. You can see that it found the route account of 1001. You can see the sorting that it used. It's LC for least cost. And also, it shows all the routes that it found sorted by it. And you can see routes with ID route 2. You can see the SIP address in it ending with 12 and the cost that it would take of 60 units. And the second ID, which is more costly, with the SIP address of 11. And here we get the reply back from DNS agent after it's done. You can see that it found a regular expression with 12 at the end, which was 60 cost units, if you saw from earlier. And also, as another use case, you can have a fail fallback. So, for example, you can have multiple answers over here. In my case, I would just have to make another request process. And in this case, I put just one instead of zero over there, and it gets the second least cost that it finds from routes. By that, you can just get the second answer also. And that's about it. Any questions? I'm guessing not. If you have any questions, you can also ask them at our Google groups.
There's a question.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Going back to the request and the response, I saw you had you were getting an account ID. How are you figuring out the account of the person asking the query to DNS?
Well, it depends on what you wanted to give. In my case, I just put that in my request on the DNS client over there. You can see at the end it's .1001. So I give it myself, that account ID.
Okay, so you're giving each, in this example, you're giving yep. each customer its own top-level domain name, so to speak.
Whatever you want, yeah.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you.